19 Uniform, thank you, descend flight level 110.
0, Shuttle 19 Uniform, join 28 Romeo Yankee, we're climbing flight level 70 on the Otago departure.
Emirates 6 Oscar Bay, continue your right turn on navigation now to Dulles.
Blue Messenger 4 Victor Hotel, turn right heading 325.
Hello and welcome to For Flying Out Loud, where we continue our mission to help inspire, empower and help all of our listeners to dream bigger. Have you ever looked up at the sky and seen a bird of prey circling effortlessly, feeling the air with its wings truly free as a bird? Most people at some point in their lives will have had a dream that they were flying completely unaided, or perhaps looked to the sky and wondered what it might be like to soar like a bird. Well, today we're going to get stuck into a huge passion of mine in the aviation world, yet one I only got introduced to 8 years ago, and that is the sport of gliding. Not only are we going to delve into what makes it so great as a sport, but also take a look at all of the huge benefits it could bring to anyone that aspires to become a professional pilot. So let's get started.
As a promoter, I had to admit, gliding, in fact, had phenomenal potential.
Gliders, sailplanes, they're wonderful flying machines. It's the closest you can come to being a bird.
And the start line will open in 10 minutes. Task A Alpha.
They are only in their early to mid-20s, yet have amassed almost 3,000 hours of combined flying time. Competing in what is an elusive sport to so many pilots, they are the future shining stars of the world of competition gliding, where pilots pit their wits against the others, using nothing but the energy in the air and the atmosphere to fly incredible distances at incredible speeds. In 2019, they won gold and silver in the Junior World Championships, and in 2020, one of these legends will enter the Formula One of this high-performance sport when he competes with the best pilots in the world at senior level. Jake Battle and Finn Slay, a very warm welcome to For Flying Out Loud. How are you doing, guys?
Hey. Yeah, good. Cheers.
Thank you very much for having us.
Yeah, welcome. So you guys, listen, welcome to Flying Out Loud. I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into this episode and demystifying some of the rumours about gliding. Of course, some of our listeners may not even know what a glider or gliding is. So can you give us a brief summary of what gliding and a glider is?
Where to start?
Yes.
So a glider, the easiest way I can explain it is it's a small plane without an engine. That's what a glider is. Then gliding... It's got a few different branches, but basically most gliders are designed to soar, which means they're designed to use the Earth's atmosphere to try and stay up for longer periods of time, to cover distances, and they're generally fine-tuned to maximise what we call our glide ratio. I won't get too technical, but basically the gliders are really efficient at converting altitude into distance forward.
And it's amazing, isn't it? Because most people think, well, so it's an aeroplane without an engine. How can we possibly go flying? Wouldn't it be back on the ground in 5 minutes? What would you say to that?
Yeah, well, it's crazy to think that most of them can fly further in a day than you could fly most powered aircraft. So.
Absolutely, because you know, the fuel in the atmosphere, essentially, on a good day, will outlast any fuel that you could put in a powered aircraft.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
So, guys, what was your first real taste of flying? And it was gliding your first taste in anything other than an airline?
For me, it was my granddad who got me into flying. So he used to be an RAF pilot. He was training. He just got his wings just as World War II ended. So he was obviously gutted that he never got to use his wings in action. We were obviously incredibly grateful for that. But he then went... But I think it was in the 80s or 90s, he got a share in a small plane. And when I was born, he basically took me up in this plane and that was it. I was completely sold on the idea that I had to be a pilot when I grew up.
How old were you at that stage, Jake?
I think I must have been 4 or 5. And I'm pretty sure I can still remember the flight. It might have been a different flight, but he'd take me to Sandown on the Isle of Wight.
Amazing.
And it was, just awesome.
And that's something we're going to touch on a bit later is, young people are so impressionable, young kids, it's really impressionable. So it's amazing that you probably still, I'm sure I would have remembered it as well. I wasn't quite that young. What about you, Finn?
Well, I flew when I was a bump before I was even born. So my mum is a glider pilot. And when I was born and a few years before, my dad was a full-time gliding instructor at Cambridge Gliding Club. So Yeah, they flew together when my mum was 6 months pregnant. So I have a logbook from when I was not even born as a P3 in a K21. And yeah, that was my first experience. But
I'm not going to ask if you remember it.
No, I remember my first one after that.
So how old were you when you first stepped into a glider that you guys remember?
For me, I think in a glider, it was 13. I had a trial flight at Kent Gliding Club. And that was my granddad bought it for me as a present. And
awesome.
Obviously, absolutely loved it. I was obsessed with flight simulator at the time. I was just getting into that. So I kind of knew how to sort of fly. But that was my first real hands-on flying experience. And yeah, I still remember the trial flight to this day.
Do you love it? How long was the trial flight for, Jake?
It was about half an hour. It wasn't soaring.
Oh, right. So you had a soaring flight then?
No, it was just a glide from like 3,000 feet. I don't think we stayed up for very long. I just remember the experience of being able to fly the aircraft was just awesome.
Amazing. What about you, Finn?
I think the first time it was just after my 11th birthday, and I have like the most vivid memories of this, and I'd played so much Condor. It's a soaring simulator game, like Flight Simulator actually before. So I'd done almost probably 200 hours on it before I actually flew in real life. And when I finally did it for the first time, it was, yeah, it's unreal.
It's no wonder you guys are so good going to it at such a young age. And a lot of people don't realise, but you can actually go solo in a glider at 14 years old, can't you? Which is the youngest you can fly in any aeroplane solo, I believe.
Yes, 14. So when I started, unfortunately, it was 16. So I started gliding at 14, and I think within six or seven months, I was ready to go solo. But of course, I had to wait. Actually, that was a huge blessing in disguise, because it meant that I got to do a lot of cool cross country flights with some of the instructors, and learn aerobatics and stuff. So incredibly grateful for that. But yeah, it was my 16th birthday when I finally got to go solo.
What about you, Finn?
Well, it's quite a funny story, really, because for probably 5 or 6 years before I'd gone solo, there was sort of some expectation that the solo age would be lowered. And my dad would always said, like, get ready before and hopefully it will go to 14. But it actually changed when I was 15. So I didn't get to go solo on my 14th birthday or my 16th birthday. So I was somewhere in between as the age was lowered.
Okay, but still pretty young. Now, of course, going solo is always exciting, and I did mine back in 1992. I don't know how old you guys were. You even born then?
-2 for me.
No, I was -5. -5, yeah.
Okay, you can go off people, you know, but I went solo in a powered aeroplane at 17 years old back in 1992, and it's always exciting going solo. But of course, there's one big difference going solo in a powered aeroplane to going solo in a glider. What is that, gents?
It's the fact that you only get one chance at the landing.
Yeah, it does focus the mind.
Yeah, there's no go around. Yeah, it really does.
It does, and even now, you know, as a hugely experienced pilot, so not quite as experienced as you guys flying gliders, but I have that sort of anticipation, particularly on a sort of gusty, windy days. I'm in the circuit turning finals thinking, yeah, I have only got one opportunity at this to get it right, and there's no second chances. So you did incredibly well to go solo in a glider. Where did you guys both learn to fly then?
For me, it was at Kent. So I was brought up from about the age of 10, we moved to Kent, and I started at Kent Gliding Club, which is based at Trolloc. And after the trial flight, they were really sort of keen to get me back. All of the instructors were saying, you know, you're good at this, Jake, you should come back and you should learn to fly, and this is how you do it. And they sort of explained it to me, explained how I joined. The first time I came back, you know, they were there to welcome me and make sure that I was catered for and looked after on that first day. I think that made a huge difference.
That's really nice, isn't it? I think everyone needs to remember that the sort of first impressions and things you do to support young people when they get into something is so important, because if you hadn't had that sort of welcoming approach, maybe you wouldn't have returned again. But that's awesome.
Definitely. Yeah.
What about you, Finn? Because there was actually one thing with you, Finn, that may have stopped you going solo. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about that?
Yeah, well, I'm absolutely petrified of heights. So, for example, I'm sure lots of people can relate. Just walking up a ladder, or even steps on the side of a building, I can't look over the side, even to this day, actually. And it was so bad when I was younger. So, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, I had sort of countless opportunities to fly. And my brother flew when he was less than 3 years old in the back of a K21, actually, at Rattles and Gliding Club. And I was just too scared. I couldn't get in. And once I eventually went, I was 11, and that was at Rattleson Gliding Club. And the floodgates opened, and I moved to Cambridge Gliding Club with my family, and there's lots of top cross-country pilots there. And when I saw them flying their high-performance single-seat gliders, that's when I was completely obsessed, actually. And
I don't think it's that unusual to stand on the edge of a ladder and feel a bit uneasy. I can't do that.
even like minor things, it sets me off so badly. And gliding has actually helped me manage it a bit better, but it was really bad when I was younger. Like, I was never able to go on a roller coaster. Even like water slides and stuff, I was petrified. And then when you like drive your car over a bridge, for example, and you get that negative G pushover, I was so hypersensitive when I started that even in the glider, any bit of turbulence or lift would set me off.
I was going to say, this doesn't sound like the perfect sport.
No, well, yeah. Sort of issues. Like the first time I joined another glider in a thermal in the back of a two-seater and saw this like ultra high definition version of what I'd seen on Condor, I was like, oh, I'm never going to be able to stop this now. That's it.
Absolutely. Jake, you made super rapid progress. I think you became an instructor really early on and even went out to New Zealand to instruct. What was that like?
Awesome, really. It was straight after I'd finished at uni. I'd been speaking to my dad while I was in that last year at uni and sort of saying, Dad, a couple of my friends have gone and done this really cool thing where they've just gone out to New Zealand for a season and just bent it as a gliding bum, basically. And I just thought, Dad, what do you think of that? And I was sort of expecting him to be like, well, have you, thought about what you're going to come back to job-wise and this? But he just said, Jake, you've got to do it. You've got to do it now. Just go and do it. And I thought, right, that's exactly the motivation I'd hoped and needed to get. And so I went straight out there. I was out there for about, I think it was 5 months, working for Wellington Gliding Club. And it was just, as you'd expect, it was awesome. Flying in the terrain they've got there, some nice mountains, good ridge days, a few sort of weird sea breezy thermal days. Just amazing, completely different.
So how many years was it from getting that first glider flight to becoming an instructor and heading out to instruct in New Zealand?
That was a little while because I had a big break after I... during sick form while I was at school. I was distracted by exams and part-time work and stuff.
All those irritating things you have to do.
exactly. But finally, I've managed to get my act together and go to another country, which was, unforgettable.
And I want to talk a bit more about the places that we've all, I'm sure, been flying around the world later on. But I want to talk a bit more about how gliding works. And to listeners out there, we're not going to go super geeky on you. We just want to give people a bit of an idea about what it is, the piloting side of it, both the aircraft and the flying, because most people with even the briefest knowledge of gliders, I think probably imagine sort of old wooden aeroplanes, somewhat primitive aircrafts being thrown up into the air and then back on the ground 5 minutes later because they haven't got an engine. Is that true, gents?
It's really, really not. When you see some of the wing profiles and avionics in some of the modern gliders, it's insane. We don't do that so much anymore. It's predominantly a winch launch is how we launch. So that's a big motor at one end of the runway and effectively a long piece of string or wire down the length of the airfield, and it just pulls us up and catapults us into the air. And more frequently used for competition and cross-country flying is an aerotow. So we're towed up by another plane, and most people will probably have seen that as they've driven around in the summer. Gliders getting dropped off in the air from often like crop spraying planes people may have seen and stuff like that.
And a winch launch, I don't do a great deal of that anymore, but I've done about a couple of hundred winch launches, I think. And as you said,
that's,
it's like being
reeled
into the ground, reeled into the air like a fishing wire. And it goes from 0 to 60 in about 2.5 seconds. It's like a motorbike acceleration. And then almost go vertically upwards to start with. It's a pretty cool way to get airborne. But I don't know about you guys, I prefer being aero-towed behind another aeroplane.
It's much more civilised, yeah.
I love the winch launch. I think it's great. Yeah.
So you see, that's just the benefits of youth, Jake, I think. Just
no, not for me. I used to close my eyes when I was younger.
Not a good idea to close your eyes when you're flying, Finn.
Not anymore.
There'll be some people out there, of course, wondering how we do it. And it is all down to the atmosphere and how we stay airborne. So can you explain a little bit more to listeners about the different ways that we can stay airborne? And again, keeping it hopefully too simple for people to understand.
Yeah, so effectively all of the different ways we're using is like you said, to do with the atmosphere. So we've got three different types of lift. We've got thermal lift, ridge lift, and wave lift. So thermal lift is very briefly looking at hot areas on the ground which cause the air above them to start rising and creating these columns of air. This is probably the most common type of lift that we use in the UK, certainly the vast majority of glider pilots. We've then got ridge lift, which is to do with the terrain. So it's where you've got a step in the terrain and a wind blowing on it. And as the wind hits the slope, it rises, you get a section of rising air, and glider pilots can fly in that rising air and they can stay up all day as long as the wind's blowing in that instance. And then you've got wave lift. Wave lift's a little bit more tricky to visualise, but the way you can think of it is like a river with a pebble in a stream or something, or a boulder in the stream, and behind it you'll get ripples in the flow, and the atmosphere is very similar. The air behaves, the air is a fluid, it behaves in a similar way. So behind some sort of terrain feature like a mountain, you'll get ripples in the air, and that's that gives us basically wave lift. It's very smooth and quite often goes really high. You can get lots of big height records on this wave lift.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about some of the stats for the flights that you've both done. But yeah, mountain wave lift, I think in the UK, the gliders have flown over 30,000 feet. Is that right?
Yeah, nearly 40,000. 38,000 is the record in the UK, I think.
Wow, so really that's the high. Height of an airliner. It's just incredible
it's
to
mad.
Me. Most of our days in the UK tend to be on a nice summer's day. I mean, people, as I said in the introduction, will have seen birds thermaling, just circling. We call it thermaling, but circling under clouds and just going up higher and higher. And that's exactly the same as we're doing in the UK. And I think on a really good day, we might climb up to 7, maybe even 8,000 feet in the UK in thermals. But I love all these types, particularly the ridge flying. Have you guys done some pretty cool ridge flying and, you know, close to the ground and fast speeds?
Yeah, well, we're really lucky in the UK because we actually have like quite easy access to a good mix of everything. So we often go to a site in North Wales and they have a really long, well-defined ridge line. And we can go and race along there all day if it's a westerly wind.
It's such good fun, isn't it?
Yeah, if people know the South Downs in the UK as well, they're just a really, really small bump, basically. You wouldn't even notice the hill. And gliders can fly 300 or 400, 500 kilometres in a day. And I think somebody's even flown 1,000 kilometres. And we just race up and down all day at treetop height. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing flying, and having come from military flying, you know, low-level flying at fast speeds, the rush of flying along ridges, obviously make sure you do it safely and legally, but it is just such a blast. I absolutely love it.
It's amazing, and you can be so in tune with exactly what the air's doing over the hill. It's really incredible.
But, of course, the biggest reason we stay airborne in the UK is the thermals and this thermal lift that we see the birds circling in. And for me, that's been the biggest challenge, really, is trying to visualise, because you can't see these thermals. You can see where they might be, you know, a nice white fluffy cumulus cloud, and you go, well, there might be a thermal over there. But if you're flying with me any time soon, guys, you'll realise that I'm probably right 50% of the time. I suspect your hit rate's better than mine. But for me, it's been the biggest learning curve is visualising where this lift might be in a bid to not just stay airborne, but to fly big distances, and not just to fly big distances that even a powered aeroplane wouldn't fly because it would run out of fuel, but to do it at really fast speeds. So we're not floating around at 50 miles an hour. What sort of speeds typically might we be flying at in high performance gliders?
Well, I mean, we can fly over 300 kph in them quite regularly at top speed, but day to day cruising on a racing flight, we're cruising probably up to 100 knots. So over 100 miles per hour in between thermals. We have to stop and climb, which lowers our average speed. But we can average probably 70 miles per hour on a really good day, which is just insane. Like no engine, just on the thermals and flying in between them. And then, for example, if we fly in wave in Scotland or on the ridges, we can fly 300, 400, 500, 600 kilometres at 170 kph or 100 miles per hour, that sort of speed. So basically the same
incredible
speed they're averaging around Monaco Grand Prix, for example, in a glider with no engine. It's mad.
It is incredible. And again, I think people think that we're stopping and just turning all the time. But the thermals that we use to climb up in generally, they're like pit stops, aren't they, really? We sort of stop, pit stop, get a bit more altitude and then fly on. But how much time do we spend sort of doing these pit stops versus the rest of the flying?
I think it depends how experienced you are. When you start off, you spend probably an awful lot of time in these yeah. thermals, and you just don't want to leave them. But as you get more and more confident and experienced, we tend to look for somewhere around 25 to 30% of the time that we're flying around tasks actually, you know, thermaling, and the rest of the time we'll hopefully be cruising. And of course, in the cruise, it's not just a straight glide, you know, just sit there at 100 knots and just head for your next thermal. We're constantly looking for the most efficient line through the sky. So we're reading the sky, and that's one of the biggest skills, I think, to learn, is to try and read the sky, use the atmosphere to extend your glides, and therefore you don't have to stop and thermal as much.
Exactly, and that's the biggest thing that I've learned, and you two guys have become very, very, very proficient at that. And what I've realised is, although I brought a whole bunch of flying experience to gliding, so I was able to sort of handle the aeroplane fairly quickly, reasonably well, this reading the sky, I've moved on pretty quickly, because there's some amazing pilots at our home club at Lasham, but these little incremental gains now to be able to read the sky and fly that little bit further, that little bit faster. I guess it's a bit like sailing, isn't it? It's that sort of those small gains that make you keep wanting to come back just to get that little bit faster.
Very much so. And it's good to show you someone like yourself can come in and have a really high baseline from the being able to handle the gliders so quickly. But to really find the margins, it takes such a long time. There's so much to think about.
It's a lifetime of sport, isn't it?
And it really
you guys
is.
Are lucky, because you've got a lot longer probably to master this sport than me. But when I first got into gliding, and it depends on the club and the sort of mentality of whether it's a club that people like to go racing other gliders and flying big distance and flying fast. But I thought it was just about staying airborne and, you know, or maybe just trying to fly as far as you could. And some people still love doing that, of course. But for a lot of pilots, all of us here now, I think you guys more than me, it's definitely not just about staying airborne and flying big distances, is it? Could you tell us a bit more about what I'm talking about?
So I think there's a little bit of a misconception with gliding, that we sort of go out for a Sunday wander around the air. But when we're racing, and especially when you come to the competitions, we're so focused on so many different aspects. The racing is extremely tactical, like we said, a little bit like sailing. There's a huge amount at play, and all of the factors we're looking at from outside the cockpit, the clouds, the birds, the wind, the elements from the sea, the terrain and the ground and stuff. So we're really focused on a lot of things.
Absolutely. So and what a lot of people don't understand is that we don't just go out there and read the sky, but we are genuinely racing, just like Formula One cars do, very close to each other. Yeah, I'm not going to say the horns come out, but they sort of do sometimes. It's competitive. It's fierce.
It can be extremely cutthroat, and yeah, people are incredibly focused. And I think in the top tier of all sports, you still have the very elite who are still completely obsessed and focused on being the best. And I think that's the same even in amateur and elite and professional sport. You still have the top fighting out for the top spaces, and the intensity is really high.
What would you say, Jake, about the sort of racing element of gliding? Is that the bit that you enjoy the most?
It's up there. It's definitely in the top two or three. I get so much enjoyment from the racing, partly just, you know, the actual competitive side of it, the satisfaction when you get around a task and you've beaten your mates. There's nothing that feels better than that.
And it's never happened to me.
It will. And
thanks.
It's also just one of the other big things I love is introducing people to the sport. That's one of the other most satisfying things. But from the racing, like Finn was saying, you're sitting there focused for as long as it takes. You know, you could be in the air for, you could be racing for 5 hours, and you could be in the air for 7 hours on a good day. And you're just purely properly focused on the flying for a solid 7 hours. And then at competitions, it's not just, you know, one day and that's it, you get a break and you come back on a few days later. You're doing that every day that you're flying, for in the UK up to 9 days. So on a really good week, you could be flying 9 days in a row, back to back, with potentially a lot of hours. Less likely in the UK with our weather, but certainly much more likely abroad, where we've done our international competitions.
And we actually, in the sort of racing world, if try if you can, and you're lucky enough, if you're really good, you definitely have one of these, but have a crew. So a bit like a pit lane crew that help get the glider prepared for flight, clean, in the right place, essentially just sort of being a bit of a dog's body trying to help you out. Do you guys have crew that help you when you're at competitions?
We do. And when we go to the international competitions, every pilot has to have a crew. And we also have a team captain, and basically they're there to help you.
They hold us together. They're our glue.
They are. They're the rocks. And they help you look after the glider throughout the competition. You need to go and quite often grid the glider and weigh the glider every morning. And basically they just allow you to sleep for longer, be completely de-stressed about maintaining the glider. They come and get you when you land out. Often, especially at high level competitions, they'll send you off on cross country flights on days where the weather is very marginal, on quite long tasks. So it's often all of the competitors will land out. So
when you say land out, Finn, can you explain a bit more about what that means?
Yeah, so we don't always get back to where we started. So we're often, I would say, probably 10 or 15 times a year on average for Jake and I would land in a field. Maybe not that many now, but when we started, at least. We'd land in fields across whatever country we're flying in. So I've landed in fields in probably every single county in the UK now. And the same in other countries I've visited. And we just choose a nice field that looks roughly like an airfield to land in as safely as possible. And obviously somebody needs to come and get us. So we have crews to come and bring the trailer out to us and take us back to the airfield.
It's one of the things that puts a lot of people off gliding, I think, is this field landing thing, either because they're a little bit scared, which I think is understandable, but also, you know, I think it's a bit of a faff. Now, I came to it later, and I'm really lucky to have a glider that's got an electric motor on it, as you guys know, that so far has meant I've got back even when I may have otherwise landed in a field. And again, you know, a few times a year that might have happened. But I do, of course, go and help mates out of fields occasionally, and I actually really enjoy it. It's quite a good fun, isn't it? It's a real sort of team-driven thing.
I absolutely love it.
There's a big element of sort of camaraderie within gliding.
Massively.
And that is definitely one of the biggest drivers. We'll talk a bit later about some of the competitions we fly, but at the comps we fly, you know, if we land out, our friends will come and get us. If we all land out, then one person comes and gets the first person, then those two people go and get the, you know, two people, and then they, you know, we just work as a team to get everyone home at the end of the day. Sometimes you come home at 2, 3, 4 in the morning. It's just all part of it. And there's always an adventure on every land out. You meet new people. The number of times we've sort of been taken in by farmers and had picnics, you know, just in the middle of the countryside. I've had it on the Cotswolds at times, just, you know, beautiful views over the Cotswolds, over the River Severn, while I'm sitting there contemplating why I landed out and just having a picnic with the farmers. It's great.
I've landed in fields in different countries, and in Lithuania, I couldn't speak a word of Lithuanian to the family I met, and they filled me up with pizza and coffee and stuff. It's incredible sometimes.
Excellent. So don't be put off if anyone's thinking, God, I've got to go and land in fields. It's going to be a real pain.
No, that's actually something to look forward to, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It does sound, I'm sure, to people listening out there, that it is a bit like a Formula One race with, you know, gridding. You mentioned, Finn, and sort of having crew to help you and racing. Can you tell us a bit more about the setup on the ground? What does it look like? What's some of the more impressive days when we talk about grids that you've seen?
So in a big gliding competition, you could have sort of anything up to about 120 gliders. So if you have three or four classes in a competition, and each class has 30 or 40 gliders, and you could have well over 100 gliders. And where we fly at Lasham, often you can have grids of up to 150 gliders at a weekend. It's really amazing. In the air, it's not so much a grid in that sense. It's a lot more loose and informal.
It's chaos. It is organized chaos.
Yeah, we fly. It's called a gaggle when we have a thermal full of gliders, and it is in many ways like a Formula One grid, but often can have twice as many gliders, and it's much, much less organised and a lot more chaotic. And the difference with gliding is that It's an open start line, so you can, which means you can choose when you start. And once the line is open, which is 20 minutes after the last glider would take off, then you have an open start line till sunset, which means it's hugely tactical. So there's almost always an advantage to be the last glider to start. So everybody waits for each other, which means you almost always in competitions wait until the very, very last moment to start. And it can be
And that's because you can spot the gliders ahead, essentially, and go, right, those gliders turning are marking where a thermal is. Right, I'll go for that one.
Exactly that. And yeah, because you can't see the energy and all the other gliders mark it for you. So there's a massive advantage to starting behind.
But you talked about goggles, and I flew back in 2017. There was a European gliding championship and a really, really good day flying at Lasham. And I think there were around 200 gliders all launched in about, it may not be 200, but it was over 150, all launched in about a 2-hour window. You guys might know the stats better than me. And I was flying that day. That was an incredible day. I'll maybe post a few photos of it attached to this podcast. Were you flying that day?
That comp, I think there were a lot of big gliders as well, which look even more impressive than our little gliders that we fly. But yeah, we're quite used to flying in close proximity to other gliders. It's part of what we're trained to do. So once you've passed your sort of early solo training and you've got your qualifications, you then start to learn, how do you join a thermal that's got other gliders in? So that's something we're used to. We're trained to do it, but it still, gets the heart racing every time we do it at competitions.
You fly incredibly close, and again, being from a military background, I was taught how to fly close formation, a very close formation. I did fly, but I've flown as close as that to other gliders. And you mentioned a gaggle fin, which is essentially a collection of gliders that are airborne. And I flew my first national competition last year, and there were 34 gliders in that competition, and I was in a thermal gaggle at the beginning with 34 or 33 other gliders. I don't think I've ever been in a piece of sky as close to so many gliders as that before. Finn, actually, that's brings me to an incident that you witnessed, I believe, in a gaggle. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so it was in 2014. It was the first year I'd been flying cross country, and I actually witnessed two mid-air collisions within about 3 weeks.
Wow! Wow!
Yeah, so the first one was actually local to the gliding club I just launched, and I was in a two-seater actually, and yeah, we saw the collision. We were in the same thermal, and we saw the parachute come down past us. And we saw the glider spin past just after. And
while you were in the thermal?
Yeah, in the same thermal. It was close. we were quite a lot lower, so there was no risk.
So you saw
us.
The parachute come past with the glider following?
He came right past us and he waved at us, so we knew he was okay, which was nice, actually. mad, actually. And I watched the glider and the parachute go down into the field, so when we landed, I was able to speak to everyone and say this is where it is, and we went in the car to go and get the wreckage and meet the guy that jumped out, and yeah, thankfully everyone was okay. And the other one I witnessed again like 3 weeks later. It was unbelievable, really. It was very similar, and I just left before it happened, actually, and collision happened just behind me, and I heard on the radio and stuff people coming down, and yeah, that was pretty scary, actually. It gave me a very, very dose of a strong dose of reality about the risks in competition flying and stuff quite early on, which I think has actually been quite useful.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is a risky sport. Obviously, we do all our best to mitigate the risks. And for everyone listening out there, it's not so that people flying around not thinking about what they're doing. We are always thinking, but it is high-risk sport, just like Formula One. Accidents happen. But yeah, wow.
Yeah, if you look at motorsport and see how many bumps there are and stuff on a daily basis, there is no room for that in aviation in the air, is there? So it's there's some risk involved, but I think we do quite a good job.
How about you, Jake? Have you witnessed anything scary like that?
Not quite as scary as that. Certainly in competitions, I've been close to other gliders. And of course, when you go to your first competition, that competition will probably be the closest you've ever flown to another glider. And then you go to a slightly higher level competition and everyone's a bit more competitive and everyone wants to, really get the most out of this thermal. Then that will be, the closest you'll ever get to another glider. And basically the higher level competition, the more maybe boundaries are pushed or stretched. And unfortunately, the closer you get to other gliders and the more often you get close to other gliders. So it's not something that we're alien to. We're kind of used to it. But it's so important because we get used to it. It's so important to be, you know, reminding ourselves of the risks and try and mitigate that as far as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I've learned a huge amount flying with some top-level pilots at Lasham that have very kindly taken me under their wing, no pun intended. But, you know, occasionally, there's an awful lot of stuff that's very similar to flying air combat, believe it or not, and joining different circles, people flying different circles. That's something we did learnt a lot during air combat back in the day. But, you know, occasionally I'll get it wrong as well, and there'll be some direct words exchanged if you do get too close to somebody, and often debriefs on the ground to chat to the other pilots, figure out what it is you did, what you could have learned from it, what you could do differently next time. But it's a very tactical sport as well. What would you sort of love most, would you say, about a competition flying?
Where do we start with that? There's so much. I think winning, to be honest.
Well, if we're going to be frank about it, you've just led very nicely into this next point, Finn. I don't know if that was intentional, but it does turn out you're both pretty successful at this. And 2019, you were placed first, second, and 1-2 respectively, with Jake taking top place in the Junior World Gliding Championships. How was that competition? How did it feel to come first and second in that competition?
That competition was sort of the culmination of about 2 or 3, or probably more, actually more like 4 years of preparation leading up to it. We both, Finn and I, had sort of been involved in the sort of cross country scene and the junior competition scene for about four years up to that point. So we'd done lots of competitions. We very much had the competition bug and wanted to win. And we'd known each other a little while by that point. We'd been on sort of junior squad training weeks together in France. And we both had the dream that we wanted to represent our country at an international competition. We both did that in 2017 when we went to Lithuania at the Junior Worlds then. Wasn't as successful as we'd hoped, but we learned an awful lot from it. It was a really challenging competition. And it really inspired me, actually, just seeing the guys that won it, just how much effort they had put into their gliders in getting them perfect and getting them prepared, and how much effort they'd put in the whole management of the team. The Germans that we were flying with in particular were just, so inspiring to watch. And I think both of us took that sort of inspiration and we knew what we had to do for 2019 when our turn fortunately came around again. So we put 2 years of practice. The competition was in Hungary. We went out to Hungary in 2018 and thought we needed to learn the terrain, learn as much as we can from the locals, which was an absolute blessing in disguise because we got absolutely hammered by the locals. we knew that from that competition that for those conditions and for these new handicaps, which we'll maybe talk about later, we didn't have the right gliders for the competition, and that was a big learning point. We changed our gliders, which is quite a big thing to do. It's quite a big deal. It takes a lot of effort to get your glider ready for high-level competition. 2019, our aim was to just try and get 150 hours, gliding hours, before the competition in August, or late July, I should say. So we just wanted to fly, basically, as much as possible. That was our aim. Fortunately, we managed that. We had some luck on our side. We got loads of hours in. Fortunately, things went our way at the comp, and here we are.
Amazing. An amazing achievement. How did it feel for you, Finn?
Oh, yeah, well, Jake and I live together, we're best friends, and we're sort of like planning this for years, so it's pretty amazing to go and do it together. And, so much effort into the competition and stuff. It was really quite special.
Amazing job, guys. Well done. I mean, for anyone out there thinking it's just a bunch of young people just wazzing around having a bit of fun, it's a lot more than that. Seriously competitive flying, isn't it, guys?
It really is. Some of our, like Jake mentioned, the German team, Germany has, I think, a sports soldier scheme, which is where they employ junior glider pilots to effectively fly full-time. And they fly 6, 7, 8, 9 competitions a year, and probably around 750 hours. Some of them, and they spend camps in the Alps training. And we've got to compete against them They're fully funded teams. Did.
With our British weather.
Yeah. We have British weather, yeah. Very limited funding and stuff. So, yeah, it was...
But you did it, and we've just alienated a whole bunch of our German listeners
We were inspired by them.
Respect, yeah. We're really good friends with them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's one of the things the Germans are synonymous with gliding. You know, it's the founders of gliding and the best gliders in the world, in my opinion. But really, really lovely people to fly with as well. So, yeah, well done, guys. And talking of flying in different countries, it's been a real leveler for me coming into this sport, and I'm flying with pilots just like you guys. But last year, Jake, you and me were out in South Africa, a place called Bloemfontein with Soaring Safaris, a great setup. If you haven't checked it out, go and do it. And you'd completed some massive flight, I think, while I was out there, or maybe the day after I left or something. What was that flight you did?
Yeah, that was 1,000 kilometres. So it was my first 1,000 kilometre flight, and the day before I'd just done my first 750 flight. And that 1,000 kilometer flight went so well that it got me the national open speed record, which couldn't have gone any more perfect, really. Couldn't gone any more to plan. That very rarely happens, I think, in gliding when we're so dependent on the weather, which we just have no control over, and at the best of times can't even forecast that well. So it was a really special flight.
And amazing flight. And talking to the weather, the weather conditions as you'd expect in Africa. I mean, it's a hot country in the middle of summer. The thermals, instead of a good day in the UK being 7,000 feet or so, over there you can get a good day, well, even up to 20,000 feet potentially in thermals. But with those thermals as well come some big thunderstorm clouds and some pretty challenging weather. And that same week that I was there with you, I think there were quite a few days that we were flying sort of thunderstorm type weather.
Yeah.
What was your experiences of it, Jake?
Oh, it's just character building. It's so alien to us British pilots when we have a good gliding day. It tends to be just nice fluffy white clouds and blue skies. But you go out there and a good gliding day is quite often there's going to be thunderstorms around. And these things are huge. They're not the sort of thunderstorms that we get in the UK. They're massive. They just cover huge portions of the ground. When they rain, they really rain. You do not want to be flying in them. And then, of course, you've got the lightning to go with it. So it's all it is all quite fun. And it's often where you want to be flying. You want to be flying near all that energy. You want to be flying where the sky's going up. And of course, to create those thunderstorms, the hot air is going up somewhere. So quite often we want to get close to them, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know. Well, I remember being about probably only 100 kilometres away from the airfield and Dick Bradley, who owns Soaring Safaris, coming on the radio saying there was some big significant thunderstorms. We were right on the edge of one. It was raining. I think we were going up at, we call it knots, don't we, in gliding terms, 14 knots, which is about 1,400 feet per minute rate of climb. So I was going up really quickly in the rain, but thinking if I don't get back soon, I'm going to be landing in a field somewhere and it's going to get really, really nasty. And in fact, we did make it back, but about 5 minutes after we landed, a lightning bolt, I've got a great video of it, struck the ground 9 times in the same place, and the wind must have gusted up to 60 miles an hour, literally 5 minutes after we landed. So it's real, real stuff. What about you, Finn? Have you experienced anything sort of weather-wise like that?
Yeah, but, well, I spent the winter in Australia. I flew out there, and very similar to South Africa, it's just like off the chart gliding. It's insane, and when it's good, it's just amazing. And it very much all that energy has to go somewhere, just like South Africa. So you often get big storms, and I've got caught up in them a few times, and landed in some pretty biblical rain before, and stuff in a little club class glider with no water ballast, so they're really light, and I was getting tossed about all over the place and stuff, and had some truly incredible days flying out there. I flew a competition over New Year 2 years ago, and we flew these dry club class gliders around probably 350 kilometre racing flight, and the speeds we did are just like you couldn't possibly imagine it would happen in the UK. It's just insane what you can do out there. The energy you get.
But it really is a global sport, isn't it? And you mentioned being out to New Zealand, Jake, as well. What are some of the most memorable flights you had in New Zealand?
In New Zealand, apart from the stuff at Wellington, I managed to spend 10 days down at the Youth Soaring Development Camp, which is it's sort of run by the youth organisation in New Zealand. They were really kind to welcome me along to it. And they basically just get a load of young pilots from around the country to Amarama, which is, for anyone that doesn't know, is the gliding mecca. You know, everyone wants to Amazing. End up at Amarama at some point in their lives. So I managed to go there for 10 days, and the weather was perfect. It could not have gone any better. I was so lucky. I got to fly pretty much every day. And a bad day out there is like an awesome day in the UK. So there is always lift around, whether it's ridge lift, wave lift, thermal lift. You're going to be able to stay up. You're going to be able to go somewhere and cover cross country. And I got to fly with Justin Wills, who is one of the big celebrities in gliding, as it were. He's just done some incredible, enterprising flights. And so to fly with him was like a really special, big deal for me.
I could imagine. I was lucky enough to go and fly with another sort of well-known mountain flying pilot, G. Dale, out in the Alps 2 years ago, the French Alps, and again, flying very, very close to some big mountains, some scary sort of weather conditions, scary what we call sink when the air's all going down, and that's obviously bad when you've not got an engine. I've had a few days gliding in Australia like you, Finn, but it really is an incredible sport that you can do globally. You just got to chase the weather, haven't you? So this time of year, we'd normally be out in South Africa, but of course, COVID's put pay to that a little bit.
Yeah, it's sadly. No fun this winter for us.
No. Let's hope that next year is better. But talking about all these amazing flights, I want to throw a few statistics at our listeners, just to sort of make people aware, if we haven't already, just how incredible this sport is in terms of stats. It's not just an up and down in 5 minutes job. What's the highest you guys have ever climbed in a glider?
Oh, I think probably 17,000 feet, which was in thermals.
Amazing. 17,000. What about you?
It's so high.
What about you, Jake?
For me, it was in New Zealand. It was in Amarama, and that's 24,000 feet.
Wowzers.
And up there, you just feel so alone. You feel like you really, for me, I've just felt like I really shouldn't be up there. I just wanted to go back down and go back to humanity. But the views and the sort of experience up there is incredible.
But it's so cold at that height.
Yeah, I bet it is. I was hoping to go up to North Wales this winter and climb for a particular sort of achievement I'm trying to get, which is climb up to 20,000 feet. And unfortunately, COVID's put pay to it. But if we get some good conditions in January, I'm going to go. But it's certainly going to be cold, especially when you're up at 20,000 feet.
Yeah, especially in the UK winter. Yeah,
absolutely. What's the longest you've been airborne in a glider?
I've flown for just under 9 hours, actually. 8 hours, 46, and I think 51 seconds. If I can remember exactly, I think it's that. Which was That's... very, very numb at the end.
Yeah. Numbum. How about you, Jake?
The same, 8 hours, 41 for me, and that was in what we call a K6, which is an old 1960s wooden glider.
Oh, my goodness.
It's kind of like flying in a sort of wooden dining chair, really. It really wasn't very comfortable. But you feel awesome. It feels like an awesome achievement when you've come to the end of it and landed and been up all day.
Absolutely. I don't think I could do that with my aging back, but I think I've flown around 8.5 hours when I flew my 750K flight this July, actually, in the UK, which was a monumental
flight.
Yeah,
that's a big effort.
I mean, any big
flight. A really big effort. That's a good flight.
Yeah, well, easier for me, perhaps with the bigger wings and the wings you guys fly with, but it was an incredible day. I mean, I think we're sort of getting to the point where we've evidence just how amazing this sport is in terms of what you can achieve with it. But I want to touch on why it's such an awesome way to get into professional flying as well. A lot of our listeners out there will want to become professional pilots. And I want to sort of break into what I believe is a fundamentally important bit that sets gliding apart from other forms of aviation, from aspiring pilots looking to become professional pilots one day. And I'm blown away essentially by the amount of skills, competencies that are required to become a glider pilot. What would you say that some of the skills and competencies are that you've learned that you think would make you an asset as a professional pilot?
I think particularly from our British team and international competition flying, we've learned a huge amount of teamwork, which I think will be really, really important going forward in commercial flying. Probably we're very, very safety conscious. We've probably developed some quite strong self-analysis skills from our coaching analysis of our competition flying that perhaps you wouldn't necessarily learn if you went through the commercial route.
It's a sport where you need a great deal of teamwork in terms of, you know, none of us have got any engines, so we need help to get airborne. So we need initially someone to drive the winch, someone to run our wing because the, you know, our wings don't sit level on the ground. So we need someone to hold that for us. So it's really good for getting teamwork, developing teamwork within the pilots. But at the same time, you've got to have an awful lot of confidence and independence, because now you're flying, you're on your own, you're down to your wits against the weather, basically. And if you end up in a field, it's kind of down to you to sort it. You know, you've got to sort out the logistics of getting people to you to find you in the middle of nowhere. If you've got no phone signal, you've got to try and deal with that situation. If your glider's stuck in a field and there's a locked gate to get it out, you've got to try and, you know, think on your feet and deal with all sorts of weird situations get thrown up at you. And that's just, you know, landing out. There's loads of other aspects of the sport that requires you to think outside the box and, problem solve.
Yeah, I was going to say problem solving is probably, gliding is better than anything I've experienced for just learning to deal with stuff that goes wrong, because it always does.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of the other things I've really learned, and again, this is coming in as a hugely experienced professional pilot, just the workload involved, particularly on a day where it's a bit more challenging and the lift that we're looking for isn't as readily available. But trying to fly the aeroplane safely, trying to stay airborne, requires mental thought capacity to think about where the lift might be. Trying to fly in the UK, certainly, in pretty complex airspace. So we're trying to make sure that we don't go into airspace. Flying very close to other gliders, all of this in terms of handling the aeroplane, situational awareness, workload management, these are all skills I know as a professional pilot are fundamentally important. And to be honest with you, gliding has it in spades, and I'm amazed that more pilots, aspiring pilots, don't consider getting into gliding. From my perspective, it's the most fun flying I've ever done, and I say that having flown a fast jet off an aircraft carrier, but flying gliders is some of the most fun flying I've done, and from my perspective as a professional pilot, some of the most demanding flying I've ever done. But it's also full of some really great people as well. What would you say to sort of young people out there that haven't considered getting into gliding as a way of getting into flying? What would you say to that, guys?
Well, yeah, I think for you to say it's some of the most fun flying you've done is incredibly high praise, considering your background. But it's also, and lots of people may not know, it's probably one of the most affordable ways for people to learn to fly. Compared to power flying, if you went to hire a Cessna at something like £150 an hour, you could learn to fly for probably a third of that, if not less. And lots of clubs run junior schemes to help support young pilots, and it can be really, really affordable. And there's university gliding clubs and scholarships available, etc. So it's really, really potentially cheap way for people to learn to fly.
I think on your question about why more pilots don't take up gliding, I think people just aren't aware of what's involved, like what it's about. They've got that sort of age view of it's just flying a wooden glider down from a height, and you just land at the airfield you took off from 5-10 minutes after. It's only once we start to tell people, oh yeah, I just did a 9-hour flight and I just flew, 800 kilometers around the UK, it's like what you did? I didn't know you could do that.
And I've just been to York.
Yeah, exactly. You're back and maybe somewhere else. Yeah, absolutely. Well, having said that, I know that certainly Finn, quite recently, you've sort of been doing a bit of moving to the dark side, to use Star Wars terminology.
Yes, yeah, I can't say that too loudly.
Tell us about what's been happening.
I actually came to you for some advice, actually. It's probably why we got in contact for this podcast, I guess, and you were really helpful. But I have a goal to go and be a commercial pilot. And whether that's flying airlines or maybe something like the British Antarctic Survey is something I'd love to be able to do one day. I have a real desire to go and fly for a living. It's just gliding has been an amazing way for me to build some hours and get into it, really, because I wouldn't say I come from a particularly privileged background. So it's been a great way for me to subsidise my flying and build my passion for it, really. So going forward, to go and do it commercially is my plan.
And Jake, you've actually recently also got your private pilot's license. What's the story behind that?
So I've always, when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a pilot. I'm going to have a career as a pilot. I'm going to be an airline pilot or maybe an RAF pilot. I don't know what type of pilot, but I'm going to be a pilot. That's all I knew when I was a kid. And then as I got older, I was like, okay, all of the best pilots I've seen on TV, all of the best pilots I've seen on YouTube, they all mention this gliding thing. They all started with gliding. I was like, okay, all right, well, that could be a good way to start off, you know, my pilot career. So I got into gliding. And then basically got completely addicted to competition flying. So I've sort of put the whole private pilot, the whole pilots thing, career thing, on hold. And as I've sort of got older, I've sort of thought, actually, gliding sort of gives me all the flying that I need. It sort of fulfills my need for flight easily. I get so much enjoyment out of it, and there's so much satisfaction and challenge from it that I don't feel now that doing a career. For me, in professional aviation, is something I want to do. I'd rather do something different. I'd rather have a bit more control over my working hours. I'd rather have more flexibility so I can go and fly competitions whenever I want and go and fly all over the world. So the PPL thing was just something I've always thought would be useful at some point to have, because when it's not soarable, when we can't find thermals, ridge or wave lift, with gliders, there's not a huge amount you can do other than take your mates up and do sledge rides, which is awesome fun. But occasionally it's quite nice to go somewhere, and that's really where the PPL private pilot's license I thought could be useful.
Yeah, great. Well, and but for Finn, when do you think your sort of aspirations? In fact, Finn, you sort of touched there briefly on not coming from a very privileged background and sort of from a, yeah, I guess from a financial point of view, trying to get into gliding and being affordable. Could you talk a little bit more about that side of it for us?
Yeah, well, I mean. I've not had it hard, don't get me wrong, but I mean, I haven't had it. I've not been in a position where I've had parents to support me to go to a flight school and train to be a commercial pilot. So for me to do that, I'll have to self-fund my way through a modular route and use gliding and aerotowing as a way to build some of my hours and subsidise my my training costs effectively, which I think is a great opportunity actually. And if I had the choice, I would do it exactly the same way, because I think it's a great way to go and do some amazing flying in some countries. And I actually hope I can go and do that in New Zealand and do something quite similar to Jake's 2015 season, I think it was. And when he was talking about that in Merrimah camp earlier, I was very, very excited by that. So I'd really love to go there. But it's slightly different to Jake's situation. I was never in gliding to have any aspirations to be a commercial pilot. But the more and more I've done, the more and more I've loved being in the air. So it's sort of built that desire to go and do it for a job, really.
And the demographic, I think, for anyone that's maybe even gone and visited a gliding club in the gliding world, is it's not hugely full of anything other than well, because it's a sport, I guess it requires a lot of time, generally speaking, but usually sort of slightly older, middle class white blokes is my experience of gliding clubs. Maybe people that have retired. What would you say about the demographic and how you guys have changed the demographic in gliding?
I think you definitely make a fair comment. I think at the moment, we're sort of on the verge of quite a bit of change. For a long time now, aviation as a whole has been seeing less and less participation from younger people, younger generations, and finally, those managing those organisations are starting to realise we need to do something about this. Otherwise, we're all going to die out, and there's going to be no more flying. There's going to be no more general aviation in the UK. So things are now being done to try and encourage more young people in.
Yeah, there's a fantastic organisation, isn't there, called UK Junior Gliding, which Flight Deck Wingman I've got involved with. So you tell us a bit more about that, guys.
It's a huge part of the reason that both of us have been able to achieve what we've done so far. For me, it put me in direct contact with those people at the sort of cutting edge of the sport, the people that were winning competitions, representing the British team. Suddenly I got to meet them at events, UK Junior Gliding run events at Winter, and just have a chat with them and be like, how do you do this? Like, you know, tell me some of the things that you've done when you were flying in Australia or when you're flying, you know, against those awesome pilots at the in Poland. And that really started to make me think, hey, I could do this. I can, you know, these guys are now my mates. If they can do it, then surely give me a few years and a bit of practice, then surely I can do it.
Yeah, well, how about Gina gliding sort of movement for you, Finn? What's that done for you?
Yeah, well, so where I learned to fly, it's like you said, really, it's just old men, and which it's not a bad thing, but when I first got involved with the junior gliding scene, it was completely eye-opening, and it's where I met Jake and stuff like that, and lots of other like-minded juniors, and it's almost like a different sport, and you have like this enthusiastic group of people who want to do exactly the same thing as you, drive around the country and fly cross country and race every weekend, and it's properly inspiring, and yeah, really, really changes the sport. So it's just been amazing to just to be a part of it. And if people could experience and get involved in it like we do from the start, I'm sure we'd be able to get more people into it. It's really, really great fun.
And it's not full of people that want to go and be professional pilots. It's just a place for people to go and have a whole bunch of fun flying. And, you know, from my perspective, inspiring young people to get into any sort of aviation career, or even if they don't, all the other stuff we've spoken about, you've raised the, you know, teamwork and organisational skills and everything that comes from it. It's a whole bunch of fun. But it's also, you know, it could lead to so many positive things for people's future careers and future lives.
Yeah, there's people from all aspects. There's people perhaps like Jake and I who want to go off and compete at international comps. There's people who are sort of on their way up trying to do their commercial pilot training. There's people who are just passionate glider pilots. There's people who love instructing. And basically everyone just comes together and it's a big group of mates that all love gliding and all go and have a load of fun across the country. And if it's great weather, we go flying. And if it's bad weather, we good partying, I guess, and yeah, it's amazing.
Do you know, I think it's one of the UK junior gliding videos that inspired me to get into gliding. I think it was called Smoking the Deck or something.
Yeah, that's a good video.
it's a great video, so if anyone's listening, go and check that out. Yeah, I'm sure you've seen those videos.
Oh, it's exactly the same for us. Yeah, just exactly the same. Just watching those videos back in the 2015, 2016, when those videos were coming out over winter, it's like, oh, I can't wait for the next video. And you see the flying that they're doing at these awesome ridge and wave sites. It's like, oh, I need to do that. I need to make sure I go to the next event. And yeah, that's where you make all your friends. And the other big one is the UK Junior Gliding Competition. So every yep. year they run the UK Junior Nationals. And that is a competition that's got a huge range of different experience levels. So you get people flying their first comp all the way up to people like us with more than 1,000 hours. And it's for both of us is probably one of the best places to learn, because you speak to the people that are, you know, are winning every day, and you ask them, you know, how did you do it? And at the end of the day, they run a debrief. They literally show you, they look at all the post-flight analysis. We can see everyone's traces, see where they've flown, how they've flown. And we just have a big discussion, open discussion, to try and help everyone learn and get better at flying. And there's nothing else quite like it. So strongly recommend it.
It's an incredible day. And all the gliders are handicapped as well. Some people have got gliders that are a bit more high performance than other gliders, so they're given a handicap. And I was flying a competition at the same time that the junior nationals were happening, I think. And I just remember flying over all these gliders, yeah. People of not that many hours that have just landed in fields. I was like, oh, there's one. Oh, there's another one. Oh, there's another one. But I was like, good on you guys and girls, you know, for getting out there and getting amongst it. And it's pretty challenging. I think it was blowing 38 knots that day. It was raining, you know, and I was like, these young men and women out there doing this flying and really going for it. It was fantastic.
I think it's really in a sweet spot at the moment. And what the other beauty of it is that there's so few places and sports, I guess, where people who have literally just started can come and have a drink with the reigning junior world champion. And it's so unique to gliding, I think.
Absolutely. And I've touched on this sort of demographic. And Jake, I know you've moved into an ambassadorial role recently, which is awesome. Can you tell us a bit more about your ambassadorial role?
Yeah. So at the end of 2019, I got approached by by Pete Stratton, who's the chief at the British Gliding Association. And he said, we've got the Department for Transport coming to us, and they want us to provide some aviation ambassadors. And the purpose of that aviation ambassador is really to try and target young people and particularly those from underrepresented groups to try and get them to consider either a career in aviation or taking it up as a hobby, just to try and get them involved with aviation, engage them with aviation. Which, when he said that to me at the time, I just thought that sounds like my dream role. Like, just trying to get people into flying sounds perfect to me. So I was like, yes, thank you so much. Please, yeah. When do I start? So, yeah, as I say, set up to try and encourage younger people. Most of the underrepresented groups are, or the three biggest ones are women. So I think it's quite commonly known that there are very few women involved within aviation. Something like 5% of commercial pilots are women, which is crazy when, of course, they're 50% of the population. So part of the purpose of this aviation ambassador thing is to try and get and show and make particularly younger women start thinking about taking up aviation. One of the others is ethnic minorities. So 86% of the UK population is white. And one of the biggest questions is, so where is the other 14% within aviation? It's definitely underrepresented within aviation as a whole. So we're trying to try and reach out to those from other backgrounds and get them engaged and involved with flying, with gliding, with whatever, a career, wherever we can. And then the other big one is people with disabilities. So 16% of working age adults have some sort of a long-term illness, impairment or disability. So again, it's trying to show people that actually just because you've got a disability doesn't mean you could never be a pilot. There are so many people, we've met people, we've flown against people that have a disability. But are still able to fly on their own, fly their own glider. The gliders can be adapted to suit their disability very often. And not only that, but they can represent their countries at the highest level. So there's quite a famous glider pilot. Is he Lithuanian?
Lithuanian,
Who has won competition days at the World Championships. And he's got a glider that's been adapted for his disability. And yeah, he's beating, you know, people that don't have disabilities. So just because you have a disability, you can still take part in it, which is awesome.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, you've touched on so many points there, that one of which I covered in a recent podcast with Women in Aviation International, where the exact quotes statistics there that you quoted were totally correct, Jake. I've also mentioned on previous podcasts that in 15 years of commercial flying, I've flown with three black pilots, which I just think it's just unacceptable. There's a lot more we can be doing there. And yeah, I know there's I've seen one wheelchair disabled pilot at Lasham that's flying with a specially modified glider, so he can operate the rudder pedals with a lever on the left-hand side of the cockpit, which is awesome, and everyone's there to support him. But there's so much more to do. What sort of ideas do you think are out there that we can do to sort of encourage more of these groups to get into aviation?
I think that there's a number of different challenges, and the challenges sort of affect the groups differently. One of the biggest ones, I think, is not enough people know about gliding. They don't know what it involves. They don't know how it works. And most importantly, they don't know that they can do it, and it's quite easy for them to do and quite easy for them to get involved in. To try and target those people, we make quite a lot of use of social media. So we're constantly putting pictures up and videos up and trying to get people thinking about gliding and showing them what it involves. With the aviation ambassador role, we're trying to do school visits. We haven't been able to do it this year, of course. Everything's been up in the air this year. But the longer term plan is to try and get sow the seed in for children early on, you know, show them what gliding is.
That's so important.
And and try and get them thinking about aviation or career in aviation early on. Boy, girl, you know, black, Asian, people with disabilities, try and get them all aware that they can do it too.
And I think it's so important for all of us to like remember this. And gliding is such a great sport that really, it is inclusive. It could be even more inclusive. Let's do a whole bunch more to do it. I think you used a great phrase actually, Jay, to me before the podcast. You said, you can't beat it if you can't see it. So having role models at clubs, and I think you were inspired by a role model when you first took up gliding at Kent, is that right?
Yes. So you probably can't tell just by hearing me speak, but I actually am one of those ethnic minorities within the sport. So I'm mixed race. My dad was from the UK and my mother is from Seychelles, which is a small group of islands in the Indian Ocean just off the east coast of
it's
Africa.
Lovely.
It's awesome. I'd love to go back. Not great for gliding, though.
Yeah. No.
But, yeah, one of the biggest things on this aviation ambassadors thing was there aren't enough role models for those people from underrepresented groups to show them that they can do this, they are capable as well. So they're trying to get role models. One of my personal role models was one of my instructors at Kent Gliding Club. He was a black instructor. And when I started gliding, he was the only one that wasn't white. And it was like, oh, okay, well, it suddenly showed me that this is actually quite inclusive. There are other people from a wide range of backgrounds that do it. But since then, I don't think I've seen another black instructor. So it's clearly a problem that we need to try and solve. And I think we're working on it.
Working on it. And I just, you know, encourage all clubs out there to start thinking, you know, are we representing demographic that we could be representing to get more people into this sport that perhaps have never considered it before? Like, what can we do? What role models have we got? It doesn't necessarily mean you have to have a specific role model, but if you can, then fantastic. But, you know, everyone should be there to aim to act as a role model, not just for people joining the club, but for other members of the club as well. From my perspective, you know, how we all act within the club is really important. Let's get people getting into this amazing sport. As you know, I think from my perspective as well, sort of culture and society is not necessarily lending itself to people thinking they can get into even something as simple as getting into gliding. What would you say about sort of cultural side of society and how that maybe inhibits people from taking up this amazing sport?
I think a lot of people for years now have thought a pilot is a man's job, which seems crazy when you think about it, because of course women are just as capable as us at flying. That's one of the big stereotypes that are out there. Another one is, if you're disabled, you can't fly. We've already talked a bit about that and pointed out that that's not true in a lot of cases. It's trying to sort of challenging yourself and others to try and think differently. So when I'm on the airfield and I'm instructing a group of people, for example, if someone's coming for a trial flight or an experienced flight, and I will always try and make a point of asking the wife, daughter or girlfriend whether they'll be flying today. And if not, why not? And quite often they say, no, why would I do that? You know, it's like, well, why wouldn't you do that? You know, I think you'd actually love it. The views are awesome up there. I'll be able to show you how to learn to fly. It's really trying to make a point for all of us to try and make a point of changing the way we behave and the natural things that we think about when we're on the airfield.
Would you say that a lack of finances needs to be an inhibitor as well? To, you know, not everybody is going to be in a position where they can finance learning to fly themselves. Is that something that should stop people getting into this? If there's some listeners out there thinking, well, I literally can't afford to do that. There's no way I can do it.
I think it's like a lot of other hobbies. You do need money to be able to fly, but the nice thing about gliding is you don't need a lot of money to be able to fly. You'll need a regular income, and you'll need to try and discipline how you sort of spend the rest of your income to be able to make sure you cover it. But the nice thing is you can manage it to some degree. A lot of gliding clubs, they've got volunteer instructors. They're run by volunteers, so that tends to keep costs down. So when you're learning, at most gliding clubs, you tend to just be paying for the hire of the glider, which can be quite cheap. It can be of the order of about £30 an hour. And you'll just pay for your launch. So a winch launch can be anything from £5 to £10, depending on whether you're a younger or older person. So you can learn to fly quite cheap. You can learn at your pace. And it makes it, I think, the most affordable way to learn to fly, which I think is one of the most unique and special things about gliding.
Absolutely, and there's loads of sponsorship schemes out there, and I often paste them on, if anyone's listening out and follows the Flight Deck Wingman social media channels, check them out, because I tend to share any sort of sponsorship bursary type deals I see out there, but there's certainly some opportunities for people to put themselves forward to get sponsorship and maybe go solo. One of the other things, of course, with gliding clubs is transport to the gliding club. A lot of these clubs are in rural areas. In fact, where I learnt to fly up in the Peak District was a really rural place. It was very difficult to get there unless you had a car. What would you say to people that are sort of, you know, thinking, are there any issues essentially around these transport to clubs?
Yeah, it was a big one when I was at University of Bristol, because most people there, most of the students didn't have cars and didn't have access to cars. And the gliding club was about a 40-minute drive away in the middle of nowhere on the top of a hill. So we had to be quite resourceful with how we got these people to the gliding club. And one of the things that we did was we'd set up a WhatsApp group and try and organise car sharing. And I think that can be done across gliding as a whole, at gliding clubs. If you see people that are struggling to get to the gliding club, maybe because they're relying on their parents for lifts, or maybe because their parents work weekends, so they can't, you know, give a lift to their children to get them to the airfield or whatever, maybe just try and see if you can help, offer. One of the things that we've both seen in gliding a lot is that there is an awful lot of generosity within the sport. If people can help you, wherever they can help you, they will help you. Both Finn and I have been very much a product of that.
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the other things, when we're talking about, you know, trying to encourage more people into this amazing sport and the minority groups, I know that a lot of people living in more urban areas, which don't lend themselves very well to gliding clubs. And for that reason, you know, young people living in urban areas, how are they going to get out to the club? So I'd encourage all clubs out there really just to think, you know, what are we doing proactively to try and encourage more people into this sport that may not otherwise have even not had the opportunity, but maybe not even considered getting into the sport? And it's such an amazing thing, and I think it'd do wonderful things, and we're all so passionate about it. I think we could do a lot more. I mean, you know, even something as simple as when a new person walks into your clubhouse, you know, it would be a pretty intimidating environment for anybody to walk often into a
very
room
much
of,
so yeah.
You know. Yeah, older people. They're all, as we said, like to be white, middle class blokes. So, you know, it could be a pretty intimidating thing. So, what would you encourage people to do if they see somebody perhaps doesn't fulfil that stereotype walking in to a clubhouse?
I really believe with stuff like that, the best thing we can do is try and towards a culture shift, and we can lead that. Like, our actions can set an example for people to follow. And I think for Jake and I and the junior team, for example, in quite a senior position now with lots of experience, and like it or not, people looking up to us, I think if we're able to do stuff like that, it will set an example. And it's definitely something I've taken very seriously in the last couple of years, and we'll try and use to help stuff like that.
Absolutely. What would you say, Jake, are some of the things that we could do sort of generally in aviation, really, to encourage more people? But, you know, we're thinking about gliding clubs out here as well.
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier. One of the big things that stuck with me the first time I visited the airfield was how everyone came up to me and introduced themselves and showed me, you know, around the club, show me where the toilets are, introduced me to the key figures at the gliding club, and just made sure that I was well looked after on that first day. We all have to take responsibility to do that. You know, we're all club members, we all just want to go, and we all quite often just think about our flying and our gliding. But if we want the sport to stay around for a long time, and particularly if we want people from these underrepresented backgrounds to stay around for a long time, we need to engage with them and make them feel welcome.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. When I cover the topic from with Women in Aviation International, these four amazing female aviators, we covered lots of subjects, obviously, around young women getting into aviation. And it's interesting, I know that we have the Women's World Gliding Championships, and some people say, why have we got the Women's World Gliding Championships? Well, from my perspective, the whole point of this is to have representation and role models. And until there is a time where everybody is equally represented, I think it's a fantastic thing to have this representation and these role models out there for people. And I think that in aviation generally, you should be doing a lot more to do this. I'm sure you guys would agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Type of sentiment.
Yeah,
certainly.
Guys, well, listen, that was a really cool sideline to gliding. But anyone that's listening out there that really thinks, you know, I didn't think it was possible, I'm not sure it still is possible, I really, really would encourage you to get stuck in. Go and check out British Gliding Association. Go and check out UK Junior Gliding. Get in touch with me at Flight Deck Wingman. You know, I'm passionate about it and I'll always direct people. I'm very happy to go and meet someone that thinks, hey, I don't think this is for me. I never thought this would be possible for me.
And likewise for us, yeah.
Yeah,
we're
friendly people. Yeah, stay in contact, get in touch, and we'll make it happen. For all of our regular listeners, we're now going to move into the winging it section. So your random questions, guys, that I'm going to ask you. Are you ready for your winging it questions?
Go for it.
Yeah, we're ready.
Okay, I'm going to start with you, Finn. Are you a hunter or a gatherer?
I don't eat meat, so I'm going to have to say I'm a gatherer. I can't call myself a hunter.
Well, not on the hunting side of your competition flying.
Yeah, maybe in the competitions I can switch on the hunter side, but day-to-day life, I'm a gatherer.
Okay, fair enough. Jake, here's yours. If you could compare yourself with any animal, what would it be and why?
I think for me it would have to be an eagle. It's probably a bit obvious, but... I just remember when I was at school, and I used to watch the seagulls ridge soaring against the side of the school building. I was like, that looks awesome. I just wish I was a bird and I could just do that all day. I probably wouldn't want to be a seagull because they've got a bit of a bad rep. So eagle sounds good to me.
The seagull.
Do you know? We were a bit late for the recording this evening because I took pity. Well, I didn't take pity. It was the right thing to do on a duck, which my girlfriend saw in the middle of the road. Obviously you don't expect to see a duck just walking around in the middle of the road, and it had broken its wing. So we're a bit late while I took it to the animal sanctuary, and they said don't give it a name, but I had to give it a name. So Chuck Yeager, rest in peace, nice. Blue Skies, what a legend, nice. Passed away. So I call the duck Chuck the duck.
Oh, so he's done your good deed for the day.
So maybe I'll be a duck. They can still fly, you know. Guys, I want to see, you know, move on to where the future's going for you. And I know you, before we do that, you're incredibly grateful to some people who have helped you along the way. Is there anyone that you'd like to say a special thank you to that might be listening to this?
There's actually so many. Probably my mum, actually, for sacrificing her own flying for years and years and years to allow me to do it. A big thank you to two people who have provided me with gliders to fly in competitions for 5 or 6 years combined, is Sarah Kelman, who was a female pilot at the club I learned to fly at and really took it to and beat almost everyone there and won the nationals and lent me her beautiful high performance glider for 3 years before she stopped flying to go and represent Team GB in triathlon. So she was a massive help to me. And
amazing.
And now both of our boss, Sean Lapworth, he funded the glider upgrade effectively, as Jake and I mentioned when we went to Hungary. We had to move up in glider value basically to be competitive, and he actually helped us both out with that last year. And his wife,
fantastic.
Anne, and provided us with the gliders to go and compete in Hungary and win effectively. So I'm incredibly, incredibly grateful to him, because we probably wouldn't be able to do it.
Yeah, they're such nice people, Sean and Anne, and both very, very competent glider pilots as well. What about you, Jake? Any special thanks you'd like to put out there?
I think there are way too many. I think I tried to write a list one day and then I just realised it was just a never-ending list. I'm really trying hard to go back to all of these people and make them aware that they have played a huge part in my gliding career. But the obvious ones are family, because they've had to deal with me for so long, particularly my dad, who's my crew. He's been the one that's been chasing me all over the UK and picking me out of fields, not only the UK, actually all over Europe, picking me out of fields. And most importantly, he's been dealing with me when I'm in a mood in a field and, you know, I've mucked up a competition day. And quite frankly, the last thing I want to do is talk to anyone. My dad's always the one to pick up the pieces and make me feel a bit better. So I'm incredibly grateful to him for putting up with that and dealing with that. A huge mention to Sean Lapworth and Anne Lapworth as well, for the reasons that Finn mentioned, but basically for just removing every single obstacle that there was in the way for us to go and win the Junior Worlds in 2019. He's incredibly generous, and that was what he took it upon himself to do. He wanted to make absolutely sure that if there was any chance we could win it, that we would win it. And he's a huge amount of debt is owed to him now.
And when you're surrounded by that culture, it breeds that culture, and it's just that attitude of get it right is really important.
Both of us, longer term, are of the same opinion that when we're in a position to fund someone a glider or lend them a glider or help them or in any way remove boundaries so that they can achieve these things, we will definitely be doing that. And
fantastic.
It's all stemmed from them.
Yeah, really not lost on us, both of us, how lucky we've been actually coming through the gliding ranks. Definitely going to give it back and some extra.
Fantastic. That's really great to hear, guys. Thanks for that. What are your aspirations then, future aspirations in the gliding world? I know you're entering the seniors next year, Jake and Finn, hopefully, if you don't disappear off to commercial flying.
So I'm competing at the Senior World Championships in now 2021, got delayed by COVID. That's a unique challenge for me because the conditions where we're going to be flying, it's sort of in the middle of France. The terrain is quite rolly, hills, small fields, tricky conditions. And not only that, I'm competing against the world's very best pilots, not just the youngest, the world's very best young pilots, which is another element. And then on top of all that, I'm competing with two teammates rather than one teammate, which is what I've been used to up to now. So it feels like a big step up for me, and I feel like I've got an awful lot to learn. But that is probably the short-term big aspiration in the gliding world.
And
amazing. What about you,
Ben? Yeah, for myself, because I'm a few years younger than Jake, I've got two more internationals I can fly as junior. So in 2021, I'm preparing for with my new teammate Toby Freeland at the moment, the Junior European Championships, which is going to be held in Lithuania. And my first international was in Lithuania in 2017, and it didn't go how I wanted. So I'm really, really excited to go back there and have the opportunity and to try and do what I couldn't do 4 years earlier. And then in 2022, I can go and fly the Junior World Championships again, which is in the Czech Republic. And I was actually there this summer at the pre-Junior World Championships training, which went really well. But long term, I've always had the goal to become Senior World Champion. So that's my mission.
If anyone can do it, it's you guys. I would say at least you've had the benefits of youth to perfect your skills over many years, whereas I'm not sure I'm going to be able to achieve that. I'm going to give it a good go.
Hopefully we can get the gang back together and fly together in the future once we're both on the senior team.
What would you like to do in the future if you could change something about the world of aviation, guys?
One of the big things when I was growing up was just trying to make it cleaner. Trying to reduce its footprint on the world in terms of emissions, and that was growing up, and now from talking from my ambassador role, was trying to get those underrepresented groups involved. My personal ambition and dream is to see some of the best pilots competing at the junior nationals to be women, to be black pilots, to be Asian pilots. That I think would be awesome, and it should happen. There's absolutely no reason why it can't happen. That would be an awesome thing to change.
Amazing, absolutely. What about
you, Finn? much like Jake, really. I haven't had the same sort of research, and it's only doing this podcast I've really started to look into it. But I mean, I've always had goals to make it more inclusive and make it more available to people who necessarily perhaps would think they weren't able to afford it or weren't able to access it. And I really like to make it more readily available to everyone. And hopefully in 10 or 20 years time, we can be part of a much, much bigger gliding movement. That's what I hope. And it's going to involve us being a little bit less focused on competition gliding and a little bit more focused on that.
I think I'd also like to say to sort of the regulatory bodies out there, without mentioning who they are, I know a lot of us pilots will be aware of how congested airspace is becoming. And if it continues in this way, it's going to kill general aviation, sports like gliding in the UK,
it really
certainly
is.
And kill what is essentially the best, I believe, aviation community in the world, in the UK, in terms of innovation and where we've come. I'm going to be biased, obviously. But if anyone is listening out there from some of the bigger organisations, definitely just consider what you're doing with airspace and commercializing things, because this part of our aviation community is fundamentally important to the future of aviation success, from my perspective. Are there any final messages, Finn, Jake, you'd like to get out there before we head off this podcast?
For me, is get on YouTube and search Stefan Langer videos. You'll see some awesome videos of him flying all over the world. Search Baleka, that's Balleka. Again, awesome videos from Matt Wright, flying all over the UK in some of the most incredible places. So inspiring. If you're not a glider pilot, you will like these videos. It's just awesome.
100%. And UK junior gliding videos.
And UK junior gliding. And just search gliding video. It's everywhere. And like, get in contact. Like, that's what I want to say, really. Like, if anybody's even thinking about getting into gliding, like, send me a personal message. Send UK junior gliding a message. Anything. Like, people are happy to help. It's very inclusive. It's very very warm, very welcoming. And yeah, just get in contact and come and visit. Like, we love having people there, and it's really, really cool. So come and try it.
Awesome. Well, it's been a really inspirational discussion, guys. Thank you so much, Finn and Jake, for exposing people to what the sport is really about, for raising some important topics about how we can get more people into aviation, particularly through gliding. I'm wishing you the very best of luck in your future competitions, your future career. Yeah, thanks again. Looking forward to flying with you again next spring, probably watching you disappear into the distance.
I doubt that.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Thanks for having us as well.
You're welcome, guys. See you very soon.
Cheers, Andy. Cheers. Bye.